Ronald Reagan, as president, nominated Anthony Kennedy for the U.S. Supreme Court. That was in 1987. Kennedy was sworn in 1988. And now, 30 years later, Justice Kennedy says he's ready to retire. On Inside, McGeorge Law Professor Leslie Jacobs talks about Kennedy's time on the high court, the process to replace him, and why we might see more of the retiring justice now in Sacramento. Then, many news organizations across California, including here at Cap Radio, are focused on homelessness today. We're telling stories about homeless people, their experiences, the resources that are available, and the realities of living without a home. In this hour, we'll hear part of the rural picture from Amador County, and artist Dante Pelayo joins us to share his view of homelessness. Later in the show, live music from the Sacramento band Dog Party with a brand new album. I'm Beth Ruriak. That's today on Insight. First, the news. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy's decision to retire from active service sets up what's expected to be an intensely contentious process to replace him. It also means we could see Justice Kennedy more often in Sacramento, maybe even teaching more classes at McGeorge Law School, where he has taught and been connected for nearly three decades. On the phone is Professor Leslie Jacobs from McGeorge. She is director of the school's Capital Center for Public Law and Policy. Professor Jacobs, thanks for joining us. Actually, thanks for interrupting your summer break to join us.
No problem at all. Happy to be with you.
I have asked you before about Justice Kennedy's retirement plans. You didn't want to speculate, but did you know or guess that this was coming now?
I didn't know it was coming now. I'm not surprised that it came now. He's 81 years old. He's been on the court for most of my adult life. So, it's not a big surprise.
What else about the timing for his retirement? There's a lot of speculation about him wanting to spend time with his family, but also his sense of where the politics and the court are right now.
Well, again, I have no inside information. Obviously, he knows what's going on and made a decision with what you talked about in mind, certainly his personal situation. Also, the situation in Washington, this is a time, probably the one in the next 3 years maybe, that will be the most orderly transition. I know you said it's going to be contentious, but we can expect to see this happen in a couple of months, and that might have been something he was thinking about. I think he also thinks that I would imagine that he thinks that he's simply doing his job in the constitutional structure, which is when he gets to be 81, he says, okay, time for the rest of the process is to take over and do what you will.
He wrote, "My dear Mr. President, for a member of the legal profession, it is the highest honor to serve on this court. Please permit me by this letter to express my profound gratitude for having had the privilege to seek in each case how best to know, to interpret, and defend the Constitution and the laws that must always conform to its mandates and promises." How did you see him, Professor Jacobs, in terms of being that middle person on the court? Did you see him as a flipper, as he was sometimes called, or did you see him evaluating and judging or ruling by a straighter path?
Well, you're talking to somebody who served as a law clerk to swing justice Lewis F. Powell Jr., and so I have a fond place in my heart for what we call swing justices. That is, if you're the person in the middle, you're certainly looking very, very carefully at the facts of each case and circumstances, and that might cause you to go one way or another, and you're not as maybe straight ideologically in one side or the other, but I certainly don't see that as being a problem at all. I think it adds life to the Constitution and the way it's interpreted. So I saw Justice Kennedy doing that.
He wasn't fond of that phrase, swing justice. I think he said he preferred to be called the deciding vote.
Exactly right. Right. Well, swing justice makes it sound a little flippant or erratic.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's necessarily the way to characterize it. Certainly when you look at particular types of issues, you can see a fairly straight line.
Where he was on same-sex marriage and where he was on Roe v. Wade, which of those two arenas of decision-making do you think have been the most powerful for this country?
The most powerful? Well, obviously, there's a big influence with both of them, so it's hard to choose. gay marriage is, I suppose, the biggest change. And he was the one who came onto the court and began writing those opinions, and he was always assigned the majority opinion in that area of interpreting the Constitution and the Equal Protection Clause and gay rights. So his influence there is profound. His influence, certainly with respect to Roe versus Wade, is important as well. He was the one who joined with Justice O'Connor and Justice Souter, three Republican appointees, to nevertheless uphold, right, a decision that had been issued before he was on the court. So both important, but if I had to choose a legacy, I guess I would say it would be the gay rights cases.
Hmm. So you said you clerked for Justice Powell, and then Justice Kennedy replaced Justice Powell. Let's talk about what might be next. Does this shift in what's coming make Chief Justice John Roberts now the central justice on the court?
Well, we have to see who replaces Justice Kennedy. But presuming that it is someone off of that list of 25 that the president has published, then yes, I think we'd be seeing the Chief Justice moving into that middle position, probably, right, again, on the closest cases. And so, yes, it makes the Chief Justice important. And, of course, he's already important in the sense that he gets to assign the opinions of the cases, which, again, he's only got one vote, but he can influence how they're written by his ability to vote one way or the other and then also assign the opinions.
Did you happen to see, Professor, that the president said last night that he wants a justice who will serve for 40, 45 years?
Well, I didn't see that, but it's not a surprise to me. I would predict a justice who's being chosen. I predict the justice will be late 40s, early 50s. That would make sense to me.
I was going to say that narrows the list of 25 to someone who is of a certain age range, not to mention any other factors that will be considered. So,
well, there'll certainly be a number of factors will go into this, and I have every reason to believe that people are working extraordinarily hard on it right now, trying to figure out what the demographics are and what the ideologies are and what the decisions have been, and also where the votes are, because we do have to remember that although there are 51 Republican senators, he's going to need to get almost all of them to get this through.
Yeah, if only a few Republicans decide to go with the Democrats, then it's not a given that the Republican vote is there. So this could be, what do you expect, into the fall before we have a final decision?
Oh, I think we're going to hear names really soon.
Oh, sure.
But the thing is, before we hear names, just to be clear, there's a lot of conversations going on. And so if these people are doing their homework, they aren't going to come up with a situation where they have Republican senator defectors, because they will have figured out who they need to choose to be able to get it through the Senate. So if that homework is done, then I think we could see it happen fairly quickly, although they plan to take a summer recess, I think, so maybe we'd be at the end of August.
And just to circle back around to the Sacramento connection, I suggested that maybe we'd see Justice Kennedy more in the area, maybe more connected to McGeorge. What about that real local, not only connection to him, but desire to hear and see more about his experience and who he is?
Well, certainly. He comes from the Sacramento community. He was just back in town probably about a month ago, receiving a big lifetime award from the Sacramento Bar Association, and he spoke so fondly about all the practice here and all the people he know here. So there's no question that we would like to see him back in town. He's going to be in Salzburg teaching for us again for McGeorge. But I'll bet there are lots of people who want to see Justice Kennedy in the next couple years. So we'll see. I think he'll be a busy guy going a bunch of places.
So this is just a very beginning conversation then, Professor Jacobs. I look forward to more as this time goes on and you're back in town. And thanks so much, as I said again, for checking in with us today from Michigan.
Happy to be there.
That is Professor Leslie Jacobs from McGeorge School of Law. She's the director of the school's Capital Center for Public Law and Policy. I do want to say that we've posted a few links that you might be interested in. Ben Adler interviewed Justice Kennedy in 2013. Also, Nina Totenberg has a terrific piece, a reflection on the professional career of Anthony Kennedy. It's been airing on NPR. If you missed it, we'll post a link to that as well. You can find those at capradio.org/insight. Now we're moving on to a topic that many news organizations across the state are focused on today, and that is homelessness. In 2016, a few dozen Bay Area media outlets designated June 29th as a day to tell stories about people who don't have homes, about the issues surrounding homelessness, and that effort has continued to grow. And now more than 100 news groups are participating, including us. And in the studio with me is Cap Radio's PolitiFact California reporter, Chris Nichols. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Beth. Great to be here.
I'm curious about the frame through which you wanted to look at this subject.
Well, I think there's been a lot of attention on homelessness, and for good reason. The problem is growing. But I think even as more and more attention is paid to it, some of the myths and stereotypes about the homeless seem to persist. And so with my role with PolitiFact California, I thought it might be helpful to go and look beyond sort of the one-dimensional viewpoint that some people have of the homeless and see what's the reality behind some of these stereotypes.
It's an expanding topic for you. You, I know, haven't published your full research yet, but to just step into the subject a little bit, where did you look first in terms of a myth?
Well, I spoke with a number of policy experts here in Sacramento and asked them, you know, what do they hear that just simply isn't supported by the facts? We asked our audience on social media for some ideas. And the first one that we really heard about and kept coming up is this idea that the homeless are all from somewhere else, that they come to California for our nice weather, for the social services provided by our communities. And so we asked Ben Avey of Sacramento Steps Forward, a nonprofit here in town that's dedicated to ending homelessness, about this particular stereotype.
People, when they become homeless, more often than not, are from the community in which they're living homeless. Homelessness at its core is when people fall out of their support network. There's just the straw that breaks the camel's back, and their support network can no longer help them, and they often move to the streets very near where they lived in the past. You may not recognize them, but they are members of your community.
And that's a myth that can be verified through statistics, through conversations, asking people and finding out where, in fact, they are from. I think it links to another one that I believe you're exploring, Chris, and that is the fact that it could never happen to me. I'm here in this community, but I'll never be a homeless person in my own community.
That's right. And that one, you know, might be a little more difficult to, you know, verify. Everybody has a different situation. But I think the point with that topic, the experts, when I spoke to them, said that given our high housing costs here in California, giving high medical costs, if there's an illness, you know, in some cases, a life event can certainly trigger homelessness. The folks that I spoke with in downtown Sacramento who don't have a home, a number of them talked about tragic life events, losing a loved one, an illness that really put them on the streets, rather than maybe some of the stereotypes that maybe it was an addiction to drugs or a mental illness, things like that. That's another stereotype that we're looking at, a myth. Certainly there are a number of people with drug addiction, mental illness, but it's not quite what maybe some people would think.
Or that it's a choice. The people are simply choosing to live in a very free way on the streets. Did you add that to your list?
We did, and we talked about that with a number of experts. And I think what happens with that idea is that perhaps there are folks that do are well-meaning, want to help someone without a home, and they offer money or services, and then they're rejected. Perhaps the person without a home, is reluctant to help. And from speaking with the experts, that's pretty typical. A lot of the people without a home have been through quite a bit of trauma, quite a bit of stress, and it takes time to build trust, takes time to build a relationship. So the average person might see that as, well, they're making a choice. They don't want help. They're choosing to be homeless. But again, it's much deeper than that. It's a little more complex. There's these life events. There's health problems that come up. And so there were quite a few myths and stereotypes that I learned quite a bit about and will be putting together in an article for later today.
All right. We'll look for that at capradio.org.
That's right. And also politifact.com/California.
All right. Thanks for stopping by, Chris.
Thank you.
That is Chris Nichols, the PolitiFact California reporter based here at Capital Public Radio. More on this topic just ahead. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. Listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. As we continue stories on this day of homelessness, let's focus on Amador County, which is responding to its own homeless crisis in the foothills. And the stories about homelessness in rural parts of California can be different from the urban areas. On the phone with us is Leslie Mace. She's executive director of the Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency Homeless Shelter. Hi, Leslie. Glad to have you on Insight today.
Good morning, Beth. Happy to be here.
What are some of the challenges for the homeless community in Amador County compared to a more urban setting like Sacramento?
I think there's lack of housing opportunities, low-income housing, lack of jobs, and there's not as many. I would say it's pretty much the same types of issues that bigger communities are having. There's just not enough low-income housing to refer people to. That's one of our biggest problems here at the shelter. I have everyone here at the shelter working, and I can't find housing for them.
Can you add to some of what I was just talking with Chris Nichols about, which is the perception that people who are homeless come from somewhere else, not their only their own community, or that somehow it's a choice to live the way they do? Can you refute those myths?
Yes, most of the majority of the people that I have at my shelter right now are here because of loss of income, domestic violence, family breakup, a death in the family. And there are people that, because of those situations, end up on the street and kind of get lost out there. They have traumatic events where they have a hard time making the right choices. And so, those are, some of the issues. And I was hearing Chris say that, well, there's some people that do choose to be homeless, but that's a very small percentage. And I think, just getting out there and hitting the streets and giving the resources to the people, not only in our community and organizations, but, of course, the homeless people, and bringing the services to them so that we can, help them and let them know where to go.
Tell me about meeting veterans who are homeless and how that's been in Amador County. How often do you meet people with that background?
We do have Victory Village here in Amador County that works with veterans, and our main office, ADCA, Amador Tuolumne Action Agency. We do have a veterans services program there. So the veterans population for homelessness, it is an issue, but it's not the majority of our homeless people here in Amador County.
I think I'd like to know more about the specific numbers. So talk about your shelter and the size of the homeless population in the county.
Well, every year I do a point in time, and that is we have 24 hours, and this is through HUD, so they can get a picture of how many homeless are in our area, you know, to help with funding. And we get a group together of volunteers, and we go out in a 24-hour period and find homeless people. And in Amador County, in a 24-hour period, we found 148 homeless people, which is a huge amount. In our county, we have 40,000 people. Mm. And so that's just in one day, that's a huge amount.
How does the shelter work then for people who might be just coming in for the first time?
Our shelter, it's a historical Victorian house in Jackson. It's in a residential area. We're not the type of shelter where people line up at the door. We have families here and children. We have about 24 to 26 beds. People have to call me and do a phone screening. And if we have availability, then we take them. And our shelter, we have financial literacy classes, nutrition classes. We have a full kitchen. People can cook their own meals here. You know, we do help people with first month's rent and deposit or a couple months' rent to help them get into housing, you know, if we know that they're going to be self-sufficient. So the problem is that because people can't find housing, I can't rotate people out and get new people in, and the people that are here are having to stay here for a long time because of housing issues.
So you turned away more than twice as many people as you were able to help last year, correct?
Correct. I turn away anywhere from 15 to 25 people a month. In the past 5 years that I have been, 5 or 6 years that I've been working here, our shelter has had 729 people come through the shelter. And hopefully, you know, we've placed those people in housing or they've reunited with their families.
I'm talking with Leslie Mace, Executive Director of the Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency Homeless Shelter, which is in Jackson. Can we focus specifically on students, on kids for a moment, Leslie? You do have something called the Homeless Student Fund. And how is your help directed at young people?
The Homeless Student Fund was created by Jess Shaw and Michelle through Amador High School, and they started this about 2 years ago. That money is used, our grants are used to run the shelter and help with rent for people. And, you know, there's not money to provide books, clothes, hygiene, and things like that for school. So that money is used for our children here at the shelter. When I have families come in, a lot of times their stuff is in storage or they lose their clothing or they don't have clothing for their children to get them into school. It's mandatory that all the kids in the shelter go to school. So with that money, I'm able to take them shopping, take the kids to the store, get clothes, get hygiene stuff, get the things they need for school, books, school supplies, and things like that. So it's definitely needed for the kids here.
When you say the word needed, I wonder, short of delivering a lot of homes to the area, and you're right, homes and housing are needed everywhere, what could help? Is there a specific ask that you want to give to the community?
Well, our shelter, we do get a lot of support from the churches and the local communities that do help our shelter out a lot as far as the people here and the kids, but we need housing. We need more shelters. You know, we need people to get into a place and able to transition out and get the comfort that they need of, you know, working and being a part of a safe environment like our shelter and learning, you know, skills and just feeling more comfortable about getting out there. We absolutely need more shelters and more housing to place people in. And I don't know how to do that. It's just a huge, you know, huge topic. And I'm hoping that, you know, we come up with some solutions for building or people to donate, you know, homes for those types of situations.
Well, Leslie, we'll post a link to the ATCAA so that people can see the services, see what options are there. Someone listening might think that there's a way to connect, and we'll try to make that happen if we can.
Thank you very much, and thank you for doing this broadcast. I think it's very important.
We appreciate your time, Leslie. Good luck in the mission up there.
Thank you very much.
That is Leslie Mace, and she is executive director, again, of the Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency Homeless Shelter. You can find that link at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. Listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio, I'm Beth Ruyak. This is a day of homelessness for more than 100 media groups across California. We're focusing attention on the people and the issues surrounding homelessness. And there is a Sacramento artist who, it seems, has understood this subject, has understood people in the homeless community and the language of this lifestyle. For many years, in fact, he is Dante Pelayo. He's known well in the city. He's a poet, host of the Oak Park Open Air Open Mic, and the creator of Divine Styles Pop-Up Bookshop. Hi, Dante.
How are you doing today?
Really glad to have you in here today.
I'm glad to be here.
You were born in Oakland?
Yes, I was born in Oakland, California. My mom was a professor at Mills College at the time, and when she had me, she just got her PhD. So she ended up moving out here to Sacramento, and she had a job at Sac State. She taught in the dance and theater department for like almost 30 years, around 30 years, and that's what brought me out here. So I ended up going to Sac High. I'm from Sacramento, Oakland and Sacramento. When I graduated from Sac High, I moved to Alabama, and I went to Alabama A&M, a historically black college, and I had the opportunity to go to New York City. And I fell in love with New York City, so I came back to Sacramento, saved up my money, and I moved to New York City. And I found myself experiencing homelessness probably like 3 weeks in and everything. And I was so determined to live in New York City that I actually went through the system and I got me an apartment through the system. I had to go through the homeless shelter for a year and everything. And I ended up getting an apartment. And that was my first bout of experience homelessness. After 6 years, you know, I had a job with Starbucks that's to keep my head afloat, but I couldn't ever make ends meet. So I ended up losing my apartment, and I had to experience it again. I went through the system again, and I ended up getting an SRO the second time. But it's just like I fell through a lot of like depression and stuff, and I ended up moving back to Sacramento. I felt like I failed and everything, and there was a lot of things in New York City that I was missing. I was in New York for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Sacramento, I was missing a lot of things in New York, like the book dealers that were in Greenwich Village when I worked at Starbucks, and like the good food, the curry chicken, the Jamaican food mm-hmm. that they had. So what I did was I reached out to organizations like Soul Collective, and they gave me an opportunity to cater my food when I was living with my mother at the time. And I started... in 2013, my mom had a lot of books in her garage that she wasn't doing nothing with. And I was like, you know, can we sell these books? And a good poet friend of mine, her name is Tajabu. She's out of a group called Straight Out Scribe.
They're fabulous.
Yeah, I love them. She advised me to go to the Berkeley Flea Market, because I grew up at that flea market in Oakland, California, and I started selling my books out there at the Berkeley Flea Market, and that's what kind of launched the Divine Styles pop-up, which is my bookstore that I pop up just in anywhere and everything. So, and with that bookstore, I developed an open mic called the Oak Park Open Air Open Mic. So I use that bookstore as a fundraiser for my open mic that keeps it going. And at the same time, I'm still dealing with homelessness, you know, at the same time. So,
in the way that you grew up, you must have had certain ideas about who ends up homeless and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you yourself was became homeless, did you have that sort of eye-opening experience of a different part of life that,
yes,
that you didn't
yes.
know
it's
before?
Something that like you kind of have to experience, because like when I hear politics or politicians speak about it, it's like they don't understand. Just like a lot of them don't understand, they don't know what it's like to be Black. You know, it's the same thing. You know, you don't understand the things that we have to go through every day on a daily basis just to survive and everything. If I feel like if I didn't have my background with my mother and everything, my mom, she like raised me up to be very strong and everything. But that's all I have. That's the only person I have. And we have our issues there, which is the reason why I'm not staying up with my mother. But I love her to death. You know, I love my mom to death. And she keeps me strong and everything.
Your words say that part of your life was broken and you felt broken, but mm-hmm. my experience sitting across from you and the way you hold yourself is not of a broken person. And I think your poetry is evidence of all of the tapestry mm-hmm. of the way that you've lived. So can we hear some of that? Would you launch into some of your very freestyle poetry? And I think that's more the experience of you and your life.
Yeah, you say freestyle poetry. So, well, one thing, poetry is my therapy, and I think that's what keeps me together. You know, and I've developed a style called omnipotique poetry. So it's a form of freestyle poetry that I want to help poets with writer's block, writer's block, racism, and mental health issues and everything. I don't know how we're going to get to the racist part. We probably have to study it in the schools, but I would like to share some of my poems. And the first poem I'm going to share with you is called King. And I'll have the opportunity to do this poem at the Golden One Center for a halftime show during Martin Luther King celebration. Well, I think I'm one of the first poets to ever do that. So here goes King. We are the golden ones, doo-doo-doo. Yes, we are the golden ones, doo-doo-doo. Come from the rhythm to the light to the valley sun, doo-doo-doo. Yes, we are the golden ones, doo-doo-doo-doo. 3. Crown, turn and master your life around. Pick yourself back up when you be down. Sunlight shine on my flow and sound. Rise up, people, we are glory bound. Master, master, I am my king. I rule my life and I shine my being. Can no man rule up over me? I got the back of my kings, queens, and brethren. I protect heaven, the land where I reside. Triple that 7 to the king's glory. And I respect this game we mysteriously call life. Golden brain and hearts, you hold the juice so tight. Respect that man with the mission and master plan. Stop shooting us, we must respect us. We live in us, divine power is within us. Yo, revolution is the definition of change. Why are we so afraid to change? We need to change our earth, water, and air clean. Change the song pollution sings. We behold the bells that make the heavens ring. Let freedom ring. Let freedom ring, King. Free my people trapped in darkness. Free my people trapped in cells. Free all these people full of hate. Free people so we can relate. Find out that our blood bleeds the same. Don't get fooled by the corrupt. Don't get fooled by racism. It's a social construct to divide and conquer like Jim Crow laws. We are the children of Panther Claws. They paint laws to demean us. Paint laws to demean us. Red line land to divide us. They don't respect us. Respect us as you would do your beloved brethren or kin. Heal the soil and rise again. Heal the nation and rise again. Heal the country and rise again. Heal the universe and rise and watch the blessings flow through as Black Lives Matter, 'cause we are the golden ones. Do-do-do. There goes some. I messed up a little bit, but
you didn't mess up at all. That's the fabulous Dante Pelayo, Sacramento poet, and he's got the Oak Park open air open mic. The next one will be July 15th. It's always the third Sunday.
It's
of
the
every
third
month.
Sunday, and the location drops a week prior, so it's going to drop on the 8th. Yeah, and that's how it's kind of like a flash mob open mic. So you just got to find it. Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun, and we give away free food, books, and clothing to the community every time we do it, and I always have 7 features. So yeah, there's a flyer out there. It's on it should pop up on my Instagram page and my Twitter.
There is such a deep artesian well in you. It's really wonderful to feel how soulful your strength is.
Oh,
in
thank
your words.
You.
Would you share more? Do you have another poem we can hear?
Yeah, I'll share another poem. This piece is called Visionary Flows. It's an 18-year-old poem. So it's like,
whoa.
It's a teenager. Yeah, it's poetry is so cool. Because as it grows older, I feel like it gets more powerful.
Yeah, I didn't say that you're in your 30s now, so
yeah,
we're getting a flashback to your midlife.
Yeah. This is called Visionary Flows. I got that visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect. Find me out when you cross and you intersect. This true knowledge and this strong mind, conditioned to be the best of all time, I often find it parallel to my peers. Helping a brother or sister out up in their careers, metallic consciousness destroys all fears. And on the front lines, warriors shed no tears. So be strong and put your fist up in the air. Keep waving it around like you just don't care. Keep bobbing your head to that hip-hop beat. I'm like Nat Turner, you will never defeat me with my visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect. Yo, I'm a Cancer sign. I like to do what I feel. An ounce of emotions in my revolutionary meal. When I walk down the block, I like to keep it real. And if I'm not doing that, people pull my tail. Put me in check so I can inject true love, one love, real love. That's me. And if you're not feeling me like total, you can't see. You can't see what I can do to you. If your mind is weak, then I might conquer you with my visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect. The moon pulls, contracts straight, causing the tides. Like the moon, you are the light the sun reflects in your eyes. Processing in the brain what you feel and know. So feed it knowledge. Don't ever stop. Always go to the highest level of what you can overcome. Then that bastard oppressor can never call you dumb. I got that visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect. People, we will soon see the light. Children, the future may come tonight. Women, rise up and stand tall. True men, avoid obstacles that make you trip and fall. We may overcome all this mess that we deal with every day. It's a trip. And I know we will soon win the fight, 'cause on a holistic level, everybody gets real rights to be free. To be free as we can be. Never blinded by others that cannot see. We are strong as a unit when we come together. But freedom will only ring until we get real clever. And understand the true plan, the master plan. Erase ignorance and unlearn your colonial lesson plan. Erase ignorance and unlearn your colonial lesson plan. Erase ignorance and unlearn your colonial lesson plan to my visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect.
Dante Pelayo. Hey, could I join my voice with yours for
yes.
just the first line of that poem?
Mm-hmm.
Could we do that together?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's try it.
I got that visionary flows. Go flow, talk about my intellect.
I love that.
Thank you
so much, Dante.
Thank you for having
me. Come back again, okay? Good luck.
Peace.
Dante Pelayo, and he is the creator of Divine Styles Pop-Up Bookshop. We'll post a link if you want to donate to him or connect to what he's doing in any way. You can do that through his Facebook link and look for anything else at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio. To Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak, and that is the title track from a brand new album by the punk duo Dog Party. The album and that song are titled Hit and Run, which Chris Macias, writing for the Sacramento News and Review, called, quote, the sound of an empire being built. In fact, with this new album, there is a new album label, and Lucy Giles and Gwenny Giles are back in the studio. Hi, welcome to both of you.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Congratulations on the new record.
Thank you so much.
How about that? Is Chris right? Is this the beginning of an empire?
Hopefully so. We started our own record label, and we really hope to continue and pursue it.
Okay. The backstory to this record is pretty intriguing. I guess there was a double breakup. Each of you was in some deep pain for a while. Gwenny, do you want to tell some of that story?
Yeah. Well, Lucy had the first breakup chronologically, and I was away at school while she was still in Sacramento, so I couldn't really be there for her, but she found her way through with music, which is amazing, and so she was sharing all of the songs that she was writing through that, and then soon after, I experienced a breakup, so that helped me get my share of the songs to complete a whole album.
And here we have it, Hit and Run. It's a great title, actually, for for a breakup album. So we're about to hear some of the new music. What's the first song?
First, we are going to play a song called Operator.
Okay. Here they are, the Giles sisters and their Dog Party album. Thank you.
fantasy litter.
Dog Party and some toughness in the new album titled Hit and Run. If anybody thought this was going to be a crying, my broken heart album, it's not, is it?
No siree. Yeah, this record, it's pretty just like up in your face, kind of like, don't mess with us. Because we're feisty.
A little bit of that same attitude in starting your own record label, too. Tell me about the journey. Was there a point when you both knew, we need to step out here on our own?
Yeah, basically just the climate of the music industry right now is, it's at an interesting place. And we've noticed that a lot of big bands are jumping off these major labels and starting their own labels once their contracts end. And so we kind of looked at that and we're like, well, maybe we should just try on our own and see what it's like. And
yeah, I mean, like, being on labels previously have been really great and super supportive. And with everything that we've been learning in school, and I also did college radio, which is a little bit more like with the music industry as well, we figured that we could take a crack at it.
You were doing a good portion of this on your own anyway, and you've been booking your own shows and managing your career since you were middle schoolers?
Elementary
school at Old Ironsides long ago. We have time for another song. You ready for another one?
Yeah, this one's called Hit and Run, and it's the title track, and here it is.
The the title track of the new album Hit and Run by Dog Party. The brand new label is the Brat Music Label. And you have shows coming up this weekend.
We have a show here in Sacramento on Saturday at Holy Diver. And it's the record release show, and it's going to be a bunch of fun.
What's coming up the rest of the summer?
We have a tour. It starts on July 7th, and we're going about a full U.S. tour all the way to Detroit and wrapping our way back through the South.
You know, I really want to know whose breakup song that is, Hit and Run.
That was me.
Oops, he's giving Gwenny. It away. It's Gwenny.
Who wrote that line, "Love isn't one for threes"?
Me. I thought it was cool because it goes 1, 4, 3, so they're all numbers, but only one of them is real, or two of them are numbers.
Yeah,
I will play on words.
I heard it as numbers first. I heard the 1, 4, 3s, and then I thought, wait a minute, that's such a catchy, good punk line.
I have no idea. I just learned something new today.
There we go. All right, are you already working on the next album?
Yeah, we're always writing.
I thought so.
Yeah. Always scheming for that empire.
For the empire, right. Good luck. Keep us posted on the empire. Good luck with the new album, which sounds great.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on graduating this fall from college, Gwenny, which you're on track to do. Lucy, always great to see you. Thanks a lot. Good luck to Dog Party. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruriak. Tomorrow, our monthly Insight music special features Gold Souls, Jessica Malone, Hannah Jane Kyle, and Evil Siegel. It's hosted by Cody Drabble. Thanks for joining us. Here's more from Dog Party.